Well, it's lovely to have Sophie with us here today. Like Alice Kettle, our first conversant, she's another local artist based in Winchester, although you weren't born here.
No.
No. But this time she's working in the field of fine art using a variety of media, oils, acrylics, pastels, and recently more three-dimensional work using found objects. But perhaps we can start with you telling us a bit about your background and your training. I think that you were born with a pencil in your hand.
Ouch. I was born in London. In fact, I was born almost literally at Hyde Park Corner. It's now the hospital where I was born, St George's, is now a very glamorous hotel. And I went and had lunch there with my mother on her 70th birthday, which was a wonderful thing to do.
And then your art translated itself into a foundation course.
Mm. And I had the definite benefit of growing up in a very creative family. My father is a professional musician. My parents met at the Royal Academy of Music. And so as I started to get interested in drawing and making things, which I was probably about three when that started, I didn't ever have that experience that I know of others who feel that they have to sort of justify making things. It was absolutely accepted that that's what I was going to do with my life, and I never really questioned it. I did toy with the idea of being a vet at one point, but that's because the careers advisor told me I had very long arms.
I don't think we'll dwell on that.
But I stuck with art.
And you went to the Slade in London, and then you turned that into being an interior designer.
Well, when I finished my degree in fine art in the 80s at the Slade in London, and then the big question was, how was I going to make a living? Because obviously making art is not actually terribly lucrative. Unless you make sort of shocking things, and I don't make shocking things. So I went into interior design really just to pay the rent and buy food, but I carried on making art. And then through a roundabout set of circumstances, I ended up living in a community in North Devon, I don't know whether they're going to mention that later, where I met my husband. And again, I've been extremely lucky in my husband in many ways, but particularly in this respect, that he has always been extremely encouraging that I should continue to be an artist, even when that meant I wasn't earning very much.
When I was sitting in your house the other day, I was very aware of this different style of work. On one wall, there was a very beautiful pastel, and on another was an oil painting of the Trinity, rather sort of reminiscent of the Rublev icon. And the third wall had pieces which were rather like the Messiaen pieces that you did recently in the cathedral. And all of those different things. And I know that you're also working on some 3D work. And you said that being married to a clergyman, of course, one of the things that you have to do is be prepared to move around. And you said that it was your move to Sarum College, where your husband was a tutor, which really proved very fruitful. Would you like to talk about some of those fruits of that?
When people come to our home and they see the different type of work that I've made over the years, it's often led me to reflect on the fact that what I make is often very determined by where I'm making it. And when I first got married, I was working predominantly with oil painting on canvas, very traditional, and that's where the interpretation of the Rublev was made. Then when my daughter was very young, I was working predominantly with soft pastel, because actually the smell of terps is not very conducive to good health for small infants. So it's often, you know, had a big effect where I've been or what stage of my life I've been at. And Rowley started work at Sarum College working for a training course in about 90 five, seven, I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And I, about 3 years after that, was offered the chance to become artist in residence at Sarum College. And I had an attic studio, and it was a wonderful opportunity for me because Sarum College is full of extremely interesting people, and you get free lunch, which really helps the creative juices. And it's a very good lunch too. And so I'd have these fascinating conversations over lunch, and then if I was perhaps going for a little walk after lunch, I might drift into the stonemason's yard at the works department at the cathedral there. And I'd found that very inspiring, and I found old fragments of an alabaster sort of tomb that at some point 200 years ago had been dismantled and discarded in the works department. And I thought, oh, I wonder if they want that. So I said, do you want this? And they said, no. So I had it and started to carve it and shape it and gild it and turned it into a piece of work. And in many respects, that's where my interest really began, with the idea of found objects and the history that they embody, and the idea of the stuff of creation that we are amongst and around all our lives and often don't notice. So it's about noticing the things that have somehow become discarded. That really interests me.
Is that the piece called Hospitality? Or is that another piece?
That's another piece. That isn't alabaster. That's actually Chilmark stone. It's a small piece that's actually at Sarum College that you're mentioning. There's the image of it at the back. And it's... I was very interested. I love icons, traditional Byzantine and Greek Orthodox icons. And the image of the Rublev, you know, the most famous, the Hospitality of Abraham, has always been a great inspiration to me. And the idea of what's happening in that icon, this community of three in reflective conversation with each other, using the language of sacred colour, which Rublev does, has always attracted me. And that piece, because Sarum College is actually all about offering hospitality and creating a place where people can engage and enrich their experience. So that piece was made partly with Sarum in mind. But here, three simple fragments of quite possibly bits of the old cathedral, because they'd just been, again, lying around in the works department, were turned into almost like three standing stones, but then were painted and gilded to evoke rather than illustrate the idea of the hospitality in the icon.
So then, having spent many productive years in Salisbury, you moved to Winchester, which could have been rather a disaster, I guess. But you speak with great enthusiasm about what being in Winchester has produced in terms of your work and inspiration.
I felt a great loss leaving Sarum. Not that I ever thought that moving to Winchester would be a disaster, yeah. But it was a big loss leaving that community which had given me so much. And when we arrived here, we looked round the very lovely home that the cathedral has provided. I spotted the biggest room in the house, and I said to Rowley very early on, that would make a great studio. And he didn't say no, so that's what it is. And in fact, it has been very, very fruitful. It's been fantastic being here. I have got the biggest room in the house as my studio. And I've got space in the garden to carve in stone without creating too much mess. Big garage where I can store stuff. And the absolutely stunning cathedral on my doorstep, which is a never-ending source of inspiration.
You talk about moving as a challenge, and certainly being in Winchester, you've still carried on with some of your teaching. In fact, I think you've got some pupils here.
I've got rent-a-crowd here today.
they're having their lunch break.
Sorry.
And this is a teaching day for them, so that's lovely. It's lovely to see you. Then you became a little involved as a consultant in the cathedral, because our cathedral, as many of us will know, has had a good tradition of interest in art.
Mm.
And so can you tell us how that works?
Yeah, well, it was you know, one of those wonderful accidents of fate. There was a need to pick up partly in a way where Keith Walker had left off when he retired, and the idea that, you know, Winchester had this reputation of dealing with creativity in interesting and unusual ways, in the work that Keith had brought to the cathedral. And there was an opportunity to somehow convert that into a more concrete role and seek out artists and provide education and teaching around the act of creating. And I was invited to do that by the chapter, and that's been a fantastic opportunity for me. It's enabled me to get to know the community at the cathedral better, and to provide, you know, a wonderful showcase for interesting artists and work with some great people.
I suppose the great inspiring piece of work that Sophie has done it recently, you may or may not have seen it, but was the collaboration with Sarah Baldock, the organist at the cathedral, for the Messiaen piece, La Nativité du Seigneur. Nine wonderful paintings?
Really know what they are, actually.
Pieces of work about what size?
They're about 3 foot square.
Square, yes. Nine of them. To mm-hmm. illustrate the nine movements of this piece of music. Messiaen, sometimes a bit difficult to my ears. And Sarah came to you. Tell us about that, because it was very exciting for those of us that saw it. Those of you who haven't, it's on display again with the music and with Rowley's meditations at the end of the month in Guildford Cathedral. But tell us about, because it was Winchester that inspired it.
Yeah. Well, I've already mentioned that I grew up in a musical family, and my father was very much at the forefront of extremely expressionist 60s contemporary classical music, which my mother described as the sound of a large amount of instruments falling down the stairs. And so I was used to challenging sounds, but when Sarah Baldock said to me at the Christmas party, which is always held in January, in fact, because it's just too busy over Christmas, did I like Messiaen? I'm afraid the answer was not really. But she talked a little bit about this idea that she had of how Messiaen, who, when he writes, his intention is to actually create images in the imagination of the listeners. It's known as program music. That's how it's described. And if you think of Elgar and Vaughan Williams, the similar sorts, the idea of the four seasons. You know, do you see the idea here? And she talked to me a little bit more about this particular suite of music, the Nativité, and how it incorporates all the things that really matter to me the most about the incarnation and hope and trust in God and you know, how we're all yearning and striving to be close to our Creator. And I just thought, I really got to give this a proper listen. So I did, and actually I found, probably after about the 15th attempt, that I did start to get what was going on. And Sarah and I worked occasionally closely, because she's incredibly busy, but I needed the musicians input about this, and we looked at the structure of the music, literally how it looks on the page, and then also the structure as it's heard in the ear. And then my job was to somehow try to pull out the key themes that Messiaen was working with, all inspired by biblical texts, and try and give it visual structure. And to do that, I used a very wide range of materials, which is why I don't quite know whether they're paintings.
There's
a lot of paint on there, but they're almost as much sculpture as they are painting, because they're using copper and fabric and glass and gilding and lead and all sorts of things like that. So essentially, they're mixed media panels, and the nine of them represent the fact that there are nine movements in the suite of music.
Mm. Yes, well, they're well worth looking at. There's a book at the back that you've produced in conjunction with that exhibition, and it's well worth having a look at. Lovely work. You said that you felt that you envisaged it in the North Transept, and that was where it started its life. But at the end of the month, it will go to Guildford, which is a very different sort of cathedral, and I guess it would have been a very different piece of work if you'd started from there, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's also been to Canterbury. Was it in Canterbury Cathedral? Yes. This last January, and it's going on to Chichester, it's going up to Leicester as well, and they're doing elements of it in Bradford as well. So it's you know, doing a extensive sort of tour. And the very interesting thing has been to see how different it looks in the different settings. At Canterbury, those of us who are very proud of our cathedral here in Winchester will be tickled to know that there was no sufficient floor space in Canterbury Cathedral to put it. So it had to go in the Chapter House, which is a completely different architectural space than the North Transept at Winchester Cathedral. But, I mean, I suppose in a way I'm the worst person to judge or cast judgment on it, but others who saw it in both places said it looked different, but as at home. So, you know, yes. Definitely it seems to slightly take on something of where it happens to be.
Yes, that would make sense. One of the things you mentioned was this emphasis on found pieces, what you might call flotsam and jetsam, perhaps. But those panels have little bits and pieces sort of built into them. So there's, as you say, the copper and there's fabric and things like that. I was rather intrigued to be taken into the garage, and that the door was opened, and there were just huge pieces of, well, tree trunks and well, I don't know, all sorts of bits and pieces. Amazing. Looked a bit like my cupboard when I was an infant teacher on a rather larger scale. It made me think that going for a walk with Sophie would be something that her family might think twice about because of what she might insist they lug back. But tell us about the tree trunks.
Yes, my garage is absolutely heaving at the moment with very large pieces of wood, none of which I can claim to have carried home. They actually are Canadian redwood, some of them, and as you can imagine, they actually came from Canada, where they'd been sitting in a lake for about 70 years, and then they were shipped over to this country by an entrepreneurial type who had wanted to sell them as garden furniture and discovered that, in fact, nobody wanted them. So I got a job lot and went to this sort of big old yard in Bournemouth and found all this wood looking so sad and rejected and unloved. But there were some particular particular pieces there that I just thought, oh, wow, that would be an amazing, you know, whatever. And I began to immediately see that there was huge potential in some of these pieces. And so I got them essentially for the cost of the petrol to go and get them. And I've now started working on my next big project, following on from the Messiaen. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if you took me upstairs into this wonderful big room, the studio, and there was a piece of wood which really looks like an angel's wing, and it's. It's fixed. Presumably you have to fix it, because otherwise it will be lying down all the time.
I had a stand built.
You have a stand, yeah. Yes. So there's this piece of wood, I suppose, a couple of feet long, in the shape of an angel's wing, to which you... Well, explain how you work on that, because it's you can see that the natural piece of wood is still there, but then there's a sort of layering process with colour and materials which change it so that it's the same but different.
I think you would really regret it if I started to tell you how I made it, because I'd be here for about 6 hours.
A few minutes.
It's a bit of a hobby horse of mine, really. But in essence, I'm using pigment to suggest colour on the surface of this wood, rather than obscure the wood, if you understand the difference here. So you see the grain and the textures almost throughout, but the whole thing has become sort of hues of turquoise and cobalt and aquamarine and all these wonderful watery colours. Colour's just fantastic.
Are people allowed to touch?
I'm allowed to touch.
Right. I think that's the ultimate.
The problem with touching any artwork is that our hands inevitably have oils in them. And you know, the National Gallery and the Tate have this problem all the time with people who want to stroke bronzes. Mm. Well, you stroke the bronze and the patina on the bronze changes because the oils in your hand affect and oxidize in a way that is different to where they haven't been touched, so that, you know, the shiny knees that you tend to get. Henry Moore's work and Barbara Hepworth's work has suffered in the same way. There's a lovely Madonna and Child in the parish church at St. Ide. I don't know if anybody here knows that piece. It's very, very beautiful, still, serene piece, but poor old Mary's got these black knees and Jesus has got black hair because everybody's rubbing. So touching work is, you know, a bit of a problem, but I have a serious problem about this, because I make work, people tell me, that's very tactile. Yes. They want to touch it, and then I go, don't touch. Yes. So they'd be entirely justified in saying, don't make it then.
So the pieces you're working on at the moment, these great tree trunks, are going to be part of something called The Journey of the Passion.
Well, that's a nice title. I hadn't thought of that.
Sorry. That was what I thought. Oh, well. You're free to choose it if you wish.
Thank you. You can have some commission. No, I think you got that from... I had in my mind the idea how to explore the passion of Christ in a way that makes it resonate with people who might stand outside the church. Almost sort of the universal key words that people could say are, yes, I can see how that would relate to my life. And my six key words, letting the cat out of the bag a bit here, because I haven't finished making the work yet, are starting with betrayal, and then moving through judgment, suffering, and loss, through to hope, and then freedom or triumph. And those words seem to me to pinpoint key stages on Christ's journey through the Passion, but also those words could mean our own journey in many aspects of our own lives. So a broader hope for this project would be, if I can get funding and time and all the rest of it, to actually take a series of workshops into prison and work with people in prison who will have experienced betrayal, judgment, suffering, loss, with the potential for hope and freedom beyond. And that's, you know, what I'm hoping to do with it. We'll see.
Yeah, no, very exciting. I shall look forward to seeing it. It's a huge, huge piece. Well, it'll be a series of big pieces.
It's so really big. It's really big.
Yes. Yeah. But marriage to a clergyman usually means moving on eventually. I wonder, when you eventually move on and you look back on your time in Winchester, do you think it'll be the Messiaen piece that will sort of sum up what you did here? Or
you'll have to ask me that when we've gone.
When you've gone. Yes. And of course, moving on may mean that you no longer have a big, bright room, but a little cupboard under the stairs. And I wonder what that will do to your work.
Yeah, this is something that we reflected on, isn't it, when we were chatting a little while ago. And if I only ever have a little tabletop to work on, I'll probably end up painting miniatures. I think maybe I'm a little atypical in that respect, because probably there are artists who say, no, I absolutely have to have lots of space. You know, I can't possibly...